Good morning, everyone. This is the financial status for the quarter ending September 30th, 2020. Our starting balance, which was June 30th, was $4,289,631.78. We received fire insurance premium tax this quarter, $271,790.64. We had investment earnings for the quarter of $242,829.20. We had pension distributions for the quarter of $34,752.15 and administrative expenses of $2,888.57. Our cash and investment balance at September 30 is $4,766,610.90. There are three invoices which need to be approved. Sugarman and Susskind invoice in the amount of $743.75. Sugarman and Susskind invoice in the amount of $212.50. And Ice Miller invoice in the amount of $6,372.
Make a motion to accept.
So I do have one question in reference to the Ice Miller invoice. I know that in the past we had voted, I believe, for not to exceed. Obviously, we're going to pay it. We're not going to not pay them. But we voted to not exceed, I believe, $4,500 or $5,000 for this. And the bill came in over $6,300. I mean, besides being mad about it, is there anything that needs to happen on that? Because it's going to...
I asked Ice Miller when we engaged Ice Miller. I asked them for an estimation, and they said it would be right in that range that we'd requested. Not that they didn't estimate it would be more than about $4,500. Of course, that wasn't a binding estimation on their part. So they estimated, but they. They went over their estimation by a couple of hours. If the board wishes, I can certainly get back in touch with them and ask them if they're willing to reduce their bill invoice.
Well, and, is there a product they think?
I believe that I can go back and check. I don't recall if that amount was estimated in writing or by telephone. I believe it was by telephone, but I can go back in my emails.
The service that they provided, do we have the results of it?
Yes. Okay. There was no, we had the, you stop, I believe we examine the results at the May meeting, I believe it was. There was no impact in their opinion.
Of any kind of redistribution of the monies without violating the ordinance, is that?
That's right. That's right. The questions that we posed and the proposed modification of the ordinance, in their opinion, would not have any impact on the private letter ruling.
All right, so we have a motion and a second to approve the financial statement as and to pay the invoices.
Make a motion.
Motion done. As I said, if the board would like, I get back in touch with, if the board would like, I'm happy to get back in touch with Ice Miller and remind them that there was an estimation that they that it wouldn't pass about, that it wouldn't be more than $4,500. I'm happy to do that.
I'm not opposed to that. I do see on their invoice they did put a 10% discount already. So you are better versed in lawyer's mentality than I am. So
I think you can make the inquiry.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Just to find out what it was, and then you know we can say we addressed it and just pay it.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we so that. If the board is willing to pay it, if they're unwilling to reduce their bill, why don't we get the authorization for payment now? But that subject to my discussion with them, and see if, you know, and I will attempt to get the reduction.
Okay. So we amend that motion that was just passed.
There was a vote?
We have a motion and a second to approve it after Attorney Robinson's going to try to get it reduced. Thank you.
Which then will allow the chair to go ahead and approve the payment either in the full amount or in the reduced amount without having to wait for the next meeting.
You got that, Kate?
Yep.
All right, thank you. All right, so item G is legal review.
Okay, the only I have two items. One, obviously, were the governor's executive order that had for several months suspended the government and the sunshine law requirement was not renewed. And so that executive order expired at the end of October. So we're back now to the usual requirement that that we have a quorum of the board present, which obviously we do today. So going forward, we'll be back in a normal meeting configuration unless something changes, and there's no sign now that there's going to be a new executive order. But of course, if anything does change, I will let you know immediately. It's time for a new SPD. With the board's approval, I'll draft up the a new draft of the SPD for presentation at the next meeting. I believe there's only been one or two ordinances passed since the last SPD, so shouldn't be more than about an hour or two of work.
What's an STD?
I'm sorry, an SPD. Summary plan description, P with a Paul. You like Paul. So it's just a it summarizes the
I know what it is. Thank you.
In an easy to read fashion. And we're required to do one every 2 years.
Thank you.
Yes, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. And I, Jeremy, under finance, I guess you could give us an update if you'd like. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem at all. It was actually touched on a little bit in your financial accounting. You talked about the earnings for the quarter, but I know in your agenda packet, I believe you only have through June 30th. But just a few days ago, we did get in the final September 30 numbers. I just don't think it made its way to your all's packet. But I can give you kind of your fiscal year end numbers real quick.
It did actually make it. Ginger got it in.
Okay. I'm sorry. I saw that it said June 30, so I didn't actually scroll down through it because I had pulled up September 30 on a different file on my computer. But anyway, okay, good. Just real quick, then, you may have already seen. So for your fiscal year, we were actually up 6.6%, which, you know, sitting at the end of March, I don't think anybody in the world would have predicted coming that close to a 7% return on the year. But the markets, as I'm sure everybody's aware of, you know, they whipsawed around in a positive way, and we ended up, strictly market speaking, with a very good year in within the fund. Kind of an interesting note. So while the 6.6 is a pretty good number, it actually we had a little bit of underperformance for the benchmark for the total year. And now this is in true 2020 fashion. Our small mid-cap manager for U.S. equities, that has historically been by far the best performer. almost every single quarter. And you look back at the 10-year mark, and they're outperforming over 3% over the last 10 years on average. Well, this year, they actually were down almost 4%, where their kind of their benchmark is up a little over 2%. So it was an over 6% underperformance by the so-called superstar of the portfolio. So again, I say that's true 2020 fashion. Otherwise, the total portfolio would have had an incredible year on a relative basis. On an absolute basis, obviously 6.6% where we're sitting would have been good. So not that we're concerned about that manager, again, because of historical performance, but we did, of course, you know, start inquiring, okay, what's going on, you know, what kind of happened this year that led to this sort of result. And it all falls in line with the strategy that they've been using that has been paying off, you know, for really, we only have 10-year numbers, but truly the last 20 years they've been performing on this level. And a couple things are at play. One of the biggest things is they don't have hardly any exposure to biotech. And biotech was essentially your biggest winner in that space this year. As you can imagine, it didn't take took the least amount of hit in that March quarter, you know, where the market really was hit hard, and then it's had the biggest rally since. And of course, you know, obviously that's related to everything to do with the coronavirus, you know, healthcare companies seeing some big increases. Of course, insurance companies, I shouldn't say insurance, that's in bank, that's a different conversation, but healthcare, your biotechs, your pharmacy, pharmaceutical companies, you know, a chase for the cure or a chase for a vaccine, that has really, really driven the biotech sector very high, and they've had the most outperformance. And again, so your manager has had almost no exposure. And the reason being, that is on a normal basis, that is one of the most volatile sectors. And this manager's strategy is more of a, let's keep things kind of more even keel. And so they intentionally are not in that space. And you know, who would have ever predicted this year? So that's kind of the main reason that you see that large underperformance. And then kind of alongside of it, kind of 1B to that, is most of the companies that performed very well, and this is large cap and small mid cap really, is your loss leaders or your companies that had potential high growth rates but weren't necessarily already showing good value and had strong balance sheets. They just maybe had good potential. So a lot of tech stocks, for instance, those were your big winners for this year. And again, that's your more riskier, more volatile type sectors. And again, this manager kind of, it does have some exposure to some tech, of course, but not on the level that your benchmarks would have. So again, their strategy that historically has paid off is less volatility, less risk, you know, more established companies that have more consistent growth, stronger balance sheets. And those just weren't the winners this year. So strategically, it makes sense. And, you know, we still have conviction in what that manager does. 1 year, certainly not going to change our mind. It's just, again, kind of a perfect 2020 example where every other manager performed very well this year. And the only underperformer was your small mid-cap manager. But again, all in all, you know, I think we all are thrilled to have, you know, 6.6% return for your fiscal year. So it shouldn't, and I'm sure Doug will touch on this, but almost no matter what it was, it's not going to really impact you all. But this will just add more positive news as it relates to your conversation about, you know, potentially making some changes. So that's a kind of a high level overview of where we sit. Do you all want you have any questions, or you want me to talk about any particular aspects a little deeper?
I don't have any questions. I mean, the only certain thing about 2020 is uncertainty. So,
well said.
But anyone have any questions, Charlie?
No.
No. Marty? No. All right. No questions. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yes.
All right. Our next item on the agenda is H, new business. In your books, it will be under four. It is to nominate and select a vice chairman. Board member DeVita retired in October. He served as our vice chair. The rules of the procedure read, the vice chair shall perform the duties of the chair in absence of the latter. So we need to nominate and select a vice chair. So.
Do you want to wait until we have a full board present, or?
Can we do that, Dave?
Dave, can we do that?
She said, should we wait till we have a full board present? And I just want to make sure that's okay per our docs.
We don't have, we can wait, we don't have to. We have a quorum, so the quorum can vote the, can vote for the new officers. It's as the board pleases.
Well, what's the impact of not selecting one now?
There's absolutely no impediment to selecting one, no legal impediment to selecting one now.
Okay, so if we wanted to wait until the full board was here, you could do that.
Yeah, so there's the inconvenience of right now we don't have a vice chair. And the vice chair, one of the functions of the vice chair is to assume the functions of the chair if for whatever reason the chair were unavailable. It's better to have at least a vice chair in office. But again, there's the board may wait until there's a full board, or the board can vote today.
Marty, thoughts?
Wait until there's a full board.
Okay. That's your two folks want to wait until there's a full board, so we will table this until the next meeting.
Okay.
They must not have plans to off me yet. But if you do, you have to put them on hold now. All right. Next item on the agenda, H5, tentative dates for 2021 pension board meetings. That's going to be item number 5 in your binders. And Kate, good job on these binders. Thank you.
You're
very
welcome.
Very organized. Wow.
Can't keep them.
You said you can't keep them, but... I wrote in mine. Am I in trouble? Everyone had a chance to review the dates. They were sent out in the original package. February 12th, May 14th, August 13th, and November 12th. Is any opposition to these dates that were presented?
November 12th is not a holiday, is it?
November 12th?
February 12th.
Is February 12th is not a holiday. It's a Friday, so.
So no, it's not.
There is a holiday in February. It's
President's Day.
I just don't remember what day it falls on. Not a Friday, though. I know that. It's a Monday. How about our distinguished guest? Any of these dates bad for you? Anyone? No? No? Okay.
No problem.
All right. Perfect. If I can seek a motion to approve the dates for 2021 meetings.
I make the motion. Approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Seeing none opposed, the dates are adopted. All right. Now we'll move into old business. Item number 6 is a presentation of the formal experience study. So Doug, you're up. Doug is muted.
There, how's that? Better?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, I think I can share my screen, so give me a second here. There we go. How's that looking?
Beautiful.
And I think the magic of iPads, I can... Did that zoom in?
It did,
yes.
And it's also on that monster screen, so I can even see it here. All right. This shouldn't take very long. These kind of reports are easier when the plan is so overfunded. We'll call it a bulletproof plan. With that said, happy Friday the 13th in 2020.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I believe it's the second or third one this year, isn't it?
It's
Second, at least. Yeah. At least the second, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's two this year and one next year.
Okay, so the purpose of the experience study is to review the assumptions that are in place for funding the plan versus reality. We want an alignment the best we can. And some things we have discretion in, some things we don't, by statute or mandate. And others, there's just simply recommendations that, you know, you can take or not. I'll make it pretty easy. There's only really four things that we would recommend changing. And the first we'll deal with, it's the most important assumption in the plan, that's investment return. So you all know that we're currently assuming 7% net of fees. I did an update with Jeremy's report this morning. You're 6.6 for the year. Your four-year smooth is still going to come in close to 8. Remember, we smooth assets for actuarial purposes. So I will be reporting an investment gain for your plan when I update the valuation. And by the way, we will be getting that out in December. I know the city likes to get that for audit, especially the GASB, so we'll get that out in the next month. But regarding the investment return assumption, the good news is no matter what you do, it won't impact how much the city needs to put in, okay? Because the city puts in zero. It only potentially impacts excess monies that go for the share plan. And the reason is because we're overfunded, we have a normal cost minimum requirement. The plan still needs funding based on at least the normal cost, which again is way more than covered by state monies. But anytime you change an assumption, you're going to change that normal cost. And lowering the investment return assumption all by itself without changing anything else would increase the normal cost a little bit. And I guess I should have said, I plan on covering this page here first as a high level, and then I will actually get to the funding impact of the numbers after I go over this page. So here's what we found in the investment return assumption. Using the information provided by the League of Cities, which is your long-term expected returns by asset class, and your investment strategy, we can get pretty close to the 7%. We can more or less justify that, barely. But there's another study out there, the Horizon Actuarial Services study, that's updated every year. And that information is based on about 36 investment management firms, which includes an expectation of inflation. And what's happening each year is the projection of inflation is going down, and the expected returns by asset class are going lower as well. So if we plug in to that survey, we're getting closer to 6.78 rather than the 7. So for this experience study, I'll show you the impact if you lowered from 7 to 6.5. But I think we can have a decent discussion of going all the way down to 6, and I'll explain why when we get to the end of the report. But we're beginning to see letters from the state as they're approving plans, and I look at it as a shot across the bow. The actuaries in Tallahassee think that a long-term assumption of in the range of 5.25 to 6.5 is a better answer. And there can be a lot of discussion and back and forth on whether that's reasonable or not. I have to have a longer discussion with plans that are not overfunded because getting into the sixes is more painful for those plans. For you, it has a very minimal impact. So I plan on getting to the other bullet points in this page, and I said I'll deal with the numbers afterwards. In the meantime, trustees, do you have any questions or commentary on the investment return assumption?
I want to
want to know if I can take my money and put it in our investments.
Yeah, me too.
So how accurate is the Horizon Actuarial Survey? I mean, I know you said they look at the top three plans, but...
Well, that's the accuracy of any assumption is up for grabs. It's like, you know, how accurate is a hurricane projection cone, you know? But there does seem to be a pretty good alignment. When you look at all 34 or so managers or firms, there seems to be not a big variation in the results they're coming up with. So I would tend to say that the Horizon Actuarial Survey is pretty decent, and it's updated every year.
Have you used their assumptions in the past?
Yes, we typically run that survey study along with information from each plan's consultant to see how well they align, and generally they do. They're not too far off. The big difference usually comes down to inflation assumption. And I believe the League of Cities is using, at least with the 19 report, I think a 2.8 long term. And the Horizon survey is coming up with around a 2.2 right now. And that's the biggest difference.
Of course, we lean whatever nudges we get from Tallahassee, so.
Yes, that's really, you know, there's so many things to look at when trying to figure out what is the quote-unquote correct investment return assumption. And right now, the biggest thing to me is our plans are all using reasonable assumptions or we wouldn't sign reports. It has to do with what Tallahassee may or may not do in the next couple of years. You know, Florida retirement system just lowered to 7, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be in the 6s. So I don't want any of my plans to be very far off what FRS is using, or very far above. Below is fine.
Okay.
And if I may, from a financial perspective, we want to be conservative, and the 7 is being challenged, so it'd be easier to have a discussion with the auditors if we did lower the rate.
That's a good point as well. We're seeing more auditors and actually cities approaching us during board meetings. In some cases, it helps cities issue bonds if the pension plans are deemed less risky. So, other comments or questions on the investment return assumption at this point?
No. I think we're good.
Okay, let's jump down to mortality. This is an assumption that's linked to what the Florida retirement system uses. I think you're aware of that by statute. We reference it. 2015-157, and FRS changed the mortality assumption again back with their July 1st, 2019 report. We have no issue with it. Even if we did, it didn't matter. We have to use it, but it's based on a study from the Society of Actuaries for public sector pension plans. So I think it's probably considered more accurate because it's not just using the general population, it's using special risk for police and fire and general for general employees from the public sector. And adopting the new updates will actually lower the normal cost a little bit, meaning we think life expectancies will be somewhat lower compared to the prior assumption that we used. And when we get to the later part of this report, I'll show you the impact on the normal cost. So any questions on mortality?
So obviously this is pre-2020 death rates.
Do I have to worry,
Doug?
We'll get an update somewhere down the road, I'm sure, and we'll find out. Okay, well, probably not a whole lot of commentary on that since we just have to accept it. Let's jump down to retirement rates. This is when members get to normal retirement and early retirement eligibility, we have to take a guess as to whether the members are going to take it or not or defer it. We did find that retirees were deferring normal retirement, but you know, they're typically well into their 60s or 70s, and we hesitate adopting a deferral, even though that's been the history. So for conservatism, we're recommending that we just assume when a member gets to normal retirement, they take it. If they do defer it, it's actually just a gain that will help your funded status improve even more. You know, you remember the funded status is like 150%, so we're recommending no change to the normal retirement assumption. Early retirement, I think there was only one member who was eligible in the last 11 years, so there's no reason to keep an early retirement assumption because usually the members are old enough where early retirement is not even an issue. So we're recommending you do not assume any early retirement. You'll see when I get to the funding, there's virtually no change in funding requirements if you just remove early retirement.
Would you say that again about what you recommend? I'm sorry.
Yes, for normal retirement, we'll assume that at first eligibility, the member takes it. There's no deferral. And for early retirement, we're recommending no assumption, just remove the assumption because almost no one ever becomes eligible for early. They hit normal way in it because your group is older. You've got an older population. So early retirement's never an issue.
We just had an early retirement, didn't we?
Yeah, I said it was the first one in 11 years.
Simon?
Okay, any other questions or comments on retirement?
Yes, sir.
No.
Okay, withdrawal. I think you're well aware that there's a lot of turnover with Palm Coast. And I know the city and the fire chief are trying to do various things to lower that. In the last 11 years, on the old tables, we had expected about 32 members leave before hitting retirement eligibility, and there was 130. So you're getting a lot of turnover. So we understand there's plans to try and lower that. So we split the difference. We thought it would be worth first changing to a service-based table, and then assuming an increase in turnover in the earlier years and very little in the later years. And I think it's probably worth actually going to some statistics on that. So I'll scroll over to it. Here we go. All right, I'll help you read this busy table here. Just look at the bottom row under total. And in the last 11 years, we had 382 members, that's in total over an 11-year period, who were in the plan but not eligible for retirement. So we call that our exposure group. The next number over is 130. That's who left the plan, 130 out of 382 eligibilities. And we had expected 32.4. So your actual turnover rate was 34%. Okay, so these are all numbers I'm reading just from the bottom row under total. The old table, we had expected an 8.5%. So we don't want to modify the table to go up to 34% because we know that there's plans in the work to try and lower it. But we do want the assumption a little closer to reality. And so we're recommending the far right column for the proposed rates. And that would be a turnover of 25% in the first couple of years of service. Remembering that the true turnover in those years was like 44 to 49%. So we'll split the difference and recommend 25. Then we recommend a 15% turnover from years 2 through 5, and 5% from 6 through 10. And then once somebody gets to 11 years, assume no turnover. I think you all know you don't really don't have many people who have more than 10 years in the plan. It's a group that has low service. And that makes sense. When you have a lot of turnover, you're just not having people move through the ranks and staying on board for many years. So the net result you'll see when I get to the end of the report is going to be a reduction in the normal cost, because we will be assuming more turnover in the future, but we're not going all the way to the 34%. We want to leave some margin in there. So any questions on turnover recommendation or this table?
I have a question. If we reduce this rate, we're reducing the normal contribution amount, so that could potentially expose the city to a contribution if you're reducing the normal amount?
No. You have such an overfunding, you would have to have experience that in my opinion just would never happen to cause the unfunded liability to become positive. That only if the unfunded liability becomes positive would you.
And how often do you perform these studies?
We have a rolling of about every 5 years, so about 20% of our clients every year undergo these studies.
Okay.
Your plan is, I was just looking up the valuation. Let me give you a quick statistic here. I know numbers are hard to follow when you hear them, but last valuation, the present value of all future benefits was about $3 million. That means you only need $3 million to invest today to pay for every future check that we think would ever be cashed. Your asset value is $4.5 million. You have a $1.5 million buffer. Changing any one of these assumptions isn't going to get anywhere close to using up that $1.5 million buffer.
Okay.
We're just trying to align assumptions a little better with reality.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, other questions or comments on turnover?
No, sir.
Gary, well, this is applying to the defined benefit part only, right?
Yes.
So the excess that we have is in the defined benefit area, or are we taking that up in the share plan?
Well, the excess, we're reserving a share plan every year. That's just a standalone liability that's not impacted by any of these assumptions.
I thought we zeroed out every year on the share plan. In
other words, what do you mean zero out, Charlie?
It's not cumulative. In other words, at the end of this given year, the share plan should be distributing whatever excess we have.
If members are eligible, I think active members, still we accumulate, but they don't get it distributed. I don't think they take the distribution until they enter retirement status.
Correct.
That's correct.
But nonetheless, we have to, have enough money in there to do it. And I thought you said that, forgot what you said. All right. I'll get back to it.
So any excess funds are utilized each year, and they're put into the prospective accounts, but these actuarial numbers and percentages don't affect that, because those numbers are based on forfeitures and other things. So
But when we have money in the share plan, where does it come from? It's the excess of the funding into the defined benefit.
From the share plan money is, from what I understand, forfeited funds from people leaving the plan. Am I correct in saying that, Doug?
And from the excess.
Well, the
tax.
The source of share monies is our state monies that exceed 200,000 every year.
We put that.
That's the source.
Mm-hmm.
And if people forfeit, then the money just goes from one bucket to the other buckets. But
right.
the actual source annually are state monies that exceed 200 grand.
Excess of 200, what did we used to call that?
Frozen amount.
Frozen.
Yeah, the frozen amount. Okay. So is whatever is above in the state grant, above the frozen amount, which you're saying is 200,000, falls into the share plan. And every
yes.
year that share plan amount is taken down to zero by whatever form of distribution you have.
Well, but it's not taken down to zero every year because we have to hold it on an accounting basis for members who are still active, you know, volunteers who are not retired. We have to hold that liability for them.
Right. What Charlie's saying is that the dispersible monies are dispersed properly, even though if they're not paid out, they're dispersed into the bucket they need to be in, essentially.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they're allocated.
They're allocated, correct.
Subject to that person vesting.
Right.
Well, that shows up in our report every year that says how much each of the individuals has coming out of both the defined benefit and the share plan.
For my benefit, in the quarterly statement ending September 30th, fire insurance premium tax of $271,000 and change. Is that a quarterly amount or is that the full year?
Full year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then the excess that would go into the share plan would be $71,790.64.
Correct.
That's correct.
Okay. And then of that $71,000, a certain amount stays in the share plan because the people who are still active have some stake in that. And then the people who already retired get a distribution based
yes.
on their length of service or whatever their.
Right.
Okay.
But all the
correct.
Excess funds are allocated. Correct. That number fluctuates. I mean, sometimes it goes 240, sometimes it's 270. I'm surprised it was that high this year. But.
Well, based upon my latest homeowner's insurance, it's going to get more next year.
That's two of us.
I know it's a fixed amount that they pay.
Okay. We're all set with withdrawal and I guess share discussion for this at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, I flip back to the page I was just on, but then I'm almost done with this. Disability rates is the final. We don't recommend any change to the current rates. I don't think we had any disabilities, or if we did, it was very close to what we had assumed. So we're recommending the status quo on the assumed rates of disability. So let me get back to the very final page and go over the impact of the normal cost and then a final recommendation. So here's the summary. So currently, just look under the current row, your funded ratio is 153.6%. When I say currently, that's with the 19 valuation. And each one of these rows is a standalone. So it's not combining any. We'll deal with the combinations under 6 and 7, but until then, I'll look at each assumption separately. If you lowered the investment assumption from 7 to 6.5, the normal cost would go up $8,110. That's not the increase to the city at all, because remember, the normal cost that we measured for funding requirements with the last valuation was $86,000. But the city doesn't have a requirement because we have $200,000 in state monies that they're allowed to use. So the $200,000 state money way more than covers that $86,000 in normal cost. So if you lowered to 6.5 from 7, the normal cost, instead of it being $86,000, would be about $94,000. That's what that column means, that $8,000 is the increase in the normal cost. The unfunded liability would go up by that $91,896. However, that funded status still stays, and instead of being 153.6, it's 149%. If you want a magnitude of, I know it's like, well, 91,000 increase in unfunded. Well, remember, your unfunded liability with the last valuation was negative 1.6 million. So you would say, well, we've got a $1.6 million credit. We're going to need $91,000 of it to cover the reduction in the investment return assumption. That's how to read that. So the main point is just look at that funded ratio on the right-hand side. You're hovering around 150% no matter what you do. So any questions on the funding impact on the 6.5% assumption?
Doug, if we were to just take the plunge and from Tallahassee's recommendation and just go straight to 6, do we just essentially double that number? And
well, let's do this. Let me quickly go down the line here, and then Tim, I can answer your question about 60 seconds pretty easily.
Okay.
Mortality rates, it's a reduction in the normal cost of $1,700. That's why you see it in parentheses. Retirement is virtually no difference. It's $54 a year. Withdrawal reduces the normal cost by $19,575. Disability is no impact because we're not recommending a change. So jump down to row 7. If you combined everything, so that would be 6.5% investment, mortality, retirement, withdrawal. The normal cost goes down $13,980. If you combined everything though and went to 6, I think your normal cost, instead of it going down $13,980, it would probably go down about $6,000. So that's kind of the big takeaway from all this, is primarily due to the turnover change, you can go all the way down to 6% on the investment return assumption, take all the other assumptions in place that I recommend for mortality and withdrawal, and the normal cost goes down slightly, and your funded status stays very close to 150%. So, in my opinion, I would see no reason, unless Jeremy has another opinion, why you wouldn't go down to 6% and adopt these other assumptions. And we really don't need to discuss the investment return assumption probably for many, many years, if ever, if you just go down to 6 at this point.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. Instead of having the conversation every year, essentially we did the same thing, went from 8 to 7 with a huge jump, and it wasn't impactful. So,
yeah.
Board discussion? I see Dan joined us, I think.
Yes, can you hear me?
You can see you drawing on your screen.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm here. I got here finally. It's been a heck of a morning. I apologize.
You're good. Right. Does anyone have any questions for Doug? Doug, are you finished with your study?
I am. Yes. Yeah. So at this point, with continued discussion, at the end, when you've had a comfort level, my recommendation would be, and the board would have to vote on it so we can incorporate it with GASB in the next valuation, is combination, all of the assumptions from this experience study, including a 6% investment return assumption.
I'll make the motion. I think that we should make the motion to adopt the recommendations by Foster and Foster with a 6% investment return. If no one's, I think that would be, and that would assume everything one through six, or one through, was it five items?
Yeah, it would be items 2 through 5, including a 6% investment return assumption.
So I'll make that motion for items 2 through 5, including a 6% investment assumption.
Yes, I've been following this. I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, this motion passes.
Great news.
Good stuff, guys. Your plan it's even stronger, if you can say such a thing, as strong as it is, but you've been getting very good returns, and now it's just going to be even easier.
Well, I think that's take care of some housekeeping things for a couple years. So, perfect. All right. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate that. That was a lot of work that went into that.
Glad to do it. I'll hang around. I know there's some other issues coming up or agenda items, so I'll stay on.
So the next item on the agenda is item number 7, discuss and possible action regarding new assumption rate, which we just took care of. We just voted to go down to a 6%, so we'll pass to number 7. Item number 8, discussion and possible action regarding a graduating vesting possibility for the share plan. This item was previously brought up to not penalize folks for getting a job, because most of our turnover rate is because someone landed a job somewhere, whether it's with our city or another entity close by. Essentially, the volunteers are a stepping stone for education and for careers, and we realize that, and our program has been very successful. I mean, nearly a little over 50% of our career side is now a product of the volunteer corporation, so I think that in itself proves to be successful. So on tab 8 of your binders is this discussion. And basically what this is Doug had previously said this would have no impact financially for us. Essentially, instead of requiring a member to get 5 years to make the 100%, we would have a graduating vesting. Is that every year, every good year, a member in good standings would get a 20% stake into their share plan. So if someone does, 3 years, gets a job, then they would get 60% of what's in their share plan, which that money has already been allocated to that person in hopes that they would vest. But at this point, when they leave at 3 years, then it has to be repatriated, those funds. And this way, we would essentially, hey, thanks for your service, and then they could get a small portion of what was allocated for them. And that's what this item is. So we can have some discussion on it.
That changes, requires a change to the bylaws, right? Member in good standing status is determined by the bylaws.
Correct.
So that could be a change, okay.
Right, yeah, it's if you're a member in good standing, it wouldn't be a change. It just, it doesn't affect the defined benefit at all.
No.
Not at all. That would still be a 5-year vest. Mm-hmm. But it would literally, if they did 3 years and they didn't make their numbers, well, one, they shouldn't be around 3 years, but two is then they wouldn't be qualified for.
So you're modifying the vesting stage.
Thoughts? No.
It would require an ordinance, but there's no legal impediment. Nothing. There's no legal reason why we couldn't make that change. Mm-hmm. Or recommend that change to be made.
It seems fair. Obviously, the people who are going to be penalized are the ones who are currently in the share plan, get that repatriated money added into their percentages. So, I guess if there's any losers, if you will, in that win or loser category, it would be those people. But since it doesn't really affect the pension plan per se, you know, it seems like a reasonable way to reward service before the 5-year vesting occurs and normal retirement. So.
Dan, thoughts on this?
Tim, I think I just heard you say that if someone left after 3 years, they would get 60% of the plan. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
Now, if they left to go to what other kind of job? Would it be another fire job, another city job, or any job?
It wouldn't matter. If they left the organization, it does not affect the defined benefit. This would only impact the share plan because we have a number of people that have been offered positions, you know, whether, like I said before, with the city or another entity. But if they decide to leave the volunteer organization, but they put 3 good years in or 2 or whatever, they would be, you know, thanked, I guess you'd say, or compensated for their time.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
Would this be retroactive, or would it be from that point forward?
That's a board decision. I mean, we could do it from the beginning of our year, October 1, starting this year. I mean, or if the board, so desired, it's up to you to go retro, but a lot of paperwork too. Would you use the word retro? I would say from October, but the last year's numbers are already inputted, they're counted, they're submitted to for processing already. So I would suggest it would be something
moving
that we
forward from
forward.
October 1st.
Correct. Okay. That's what I would say.
Well, then in that case, it really doesn't hurt the people who've been in the plan for some period of time because they got any forfeitures that occurred in the previous fiscal year added to their share amounts.
That's correct.
Right. So moving forward, that would be.
I don't think Doug liked the idea. He bailed out. I'm just kidding. There you go.
I'm here.
I said Doug's
like
out.
The Brady Bunch, I swear.
It is the Brady Bunch. Doug, what are your thoughts on an actuarial status on this?
It's neutral. I mean, you're just changing how we do forfeitures every year.
Okay.
The money's the money, whether you know. So you're just changing who might be entitled to it or not.
Any other discussion? Questions?
Is that? This is just with respect to the share plan. The defined benefit still vests 5 years.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Can I seek a motion to that we move forward with this?
So moved. We change the share plan forfeiture requirements to allow for
graduating vesting.
Graduated
Marty has a motion on the floor to adopt a graduating vesting plan for the share plan. Is there a second? No second? All right. No second, the motion fails. It's not passed. Thank you. Next item on the agenda, item 9, discussing the possibilities for increasing defined benefit based on years of service. This discussion took place in a prior meeting, and this was literally just discussion. There was no architecture to this. It was the discussion of having folks who become like for 0 to 5 years, you would get the $65 at the current plan offers, 5 to so many years, you would get the next amount, and it would just encourage people to stay longer for a defined benefit, and then maybe we cap it at like 10 years plus or something like that. But that was just for discussion. I know that we're looking for plan improvements, and this was one idea that was brought up in a past meeting, but tabled until we got enough board members in-house.
Just a question. What is the basis for the $65? Is there an actuarial basis for that number, or was that just something that people came up with? Since I don't have any previous history of the, you know, where it came from.
I think there was a desire in the past to increase it from wherever it was previous. I think it was $50 previously.
Started at 50.
And there was some discussion of improving it. We ran a study, showed, you know, no impact. You know, the normal cost went up, but there was, of course, no impact to the city. And so all the parties agreed, and the city adopted it in ordinance. I think the 65 was just a prior study we ran similar to this.
Well, I think there was a little more to it than that. I think there was some reluctance on the part of the city to escalate the defined benefit because of the risk involved at the time. And we developed the share plan in order to absorb some of that money that was accumulating. And the share plan was supposed to kind of mitigate the problem that we were having and give the cities a little more comfort that they weren't obligated. Well, once they changed the defined benefit up, there's no chance of bringing it back down. That's you know, firm. Whereas with the share plan, there's all kinds of things that the city could do to modify it.
Are there plans out there that have that number pegged to a level of overfunding or anything like that, so that it kind of takes care of itself and doesn't require the city to be concerned with being left with an unfunded liability, but that it doesn't require the board to, or an ordinance, that type of thing?
I think, Doug, is that right? It could be pegged to actuarial experience.
The way it works is we get the bargaining parties, and they want some improved benefits, and they approach the city. The actuary runs numbers, and in almost every case, the city has some increased requirement. And then the city says, well, we want some assurance in the future that the cost the actuary is saying now is stable and it doesn't creep up on us and become higher. So, you know, revalue this every 3 to 5 years just to, for a safety mechanism. That's not the issue here. I mean, I'm looking at the May study we did, and going from 65 to 75, the normal cost goes up by $13,000. So you would be putting less into the share plan of $13,000 a year, and you would be shifting over to get a higher defined benefit, but there's no risk to the city. You're just, because the state monies pay for everything, you're shifting some of the state monies over to pay for a 75 from the share plan.
Yeah, I wasn't involved in May, so I didn't know that you did a study, but that's okay.
It was the same. I looked up the study for the $50 when we went to 65. And actually, you know what? Back in 2008, it used to be 35 and we went to 50. And we just increased state money. So the city's never had a contribution. So we said, well, the state monies more than cover it would have covered the $50 too, but the city, because they wanted some assurance, we were able to latch on to even more state money to pay for the 50, and then 50 went to 65.
And I can understand the city's reluctance to put themselves in any kind of a position where they would have an unfunded liability. You see all these states that have kind of put themselves in water when it comes to pensions, both in cities and states. So.
Elena, do you have any questions on that? Any input?
I think that as long as we can prove that there won't be any increase to the city, it's something that we can definitely discuss. I know this was brought up before, it's going from 65 to 75. The position would still be the same. We don't want to be where the city has to fund the plan, but the actuarial is the one calculating the risk. So if they feel comfortable that we won't be put in that position, and at the same time having a safeguard that if it does go the other way, that we have something in that ordinance or in the design of the plan that it can be reduced, that it goes back to the 65. Let's say that the frozen amount, we reach 80% of the frozen amount, which is the 200,000. At that point, the contribution needs to be reduced. I think designing it with some safeguards in there, then we have something we can present to the city manager and council, if that makes sense.
Well, you know, you're going to carry the water on this to the city. If the board approves, you know, or requests an increase on that, and would you be comfortable assuring the city that there's no risk involved here?
As long as the ordinance is designed in a way that it protects the city in case the plan goes a different route.
And that was one of the reasons that when we proposed this a couple months ago, we said, you know, it would remain the same at 65 for the 0 to 5 year population. And then it would, if you complete your 5 years and you're in that 6 to 10 year population, then that's when the 75 would kick in. And then 10 years and over could be a different amount. But with so few people above, I think the impact would be, I mean, just based on Doug's numbers in his study, the over 6 year population is very minimal. So that, and that's the only place we're really proposing the increases for the 6 to 10 year mark, and then 10 plus years would be an additional amount or whatever. If we did it for the 0 to 5 years, then that would be something that obviously would impact, you know, but getting the person to 5 years is the challenge here. So
the risk to the plan is not poor experience. It's going to be receipt of state monies. If the state changes how much they decide Palm Coast gets, and it's not 271,000, it's they, you know, if the rules change or anything that affects the state money, that's where the risk is. The risk is not based at this point on experience or the benefit structure you're describing. But that's a game changer if the state ever decides to mess with the state monies, because that's what's covering everything at this point.
But the ordinance covers that. The city can cancel this program anytime they want. You know, they still have an obligation to the time that they cut it off. But if changing that should escalate it in any way, the city council can, you know, stop the program. And that's in the ordinance, I believe, right?
They can certainly, yes, the city can terminate the fund at any time.
I'm sorry, Dave.
I'm sorry, yes, the city can terminate the fund at any time. Yes, that's correct.
All right, so do we need clarification, Helena?
Yes.
Is something that you want to see in there that you would propose?
I think we need to review the May study, and I can review that with the city manager and have other parties involved, and then maybe bring some ideas to your next meeting, if that works.
Yeah, perfect.
Now, if the state reduces or does away with the insurance, that's a totally different problem that we'll have on our hands.
So this will be tabled to a further meeting. Thank you. All right, next item on the agenda is public comments. There's a lot in here, but Seeing no one approaching the podium, we'll move forward. We'll close public comments. Item number K, discussion by board items not on the agenda. Anything? Dan, you got anything?
No, sir. I would ask you to give me a call after this meeting, not concerning anything that we've talked about.
Okay. All right. I'll seek a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
All right. Second in over here by Marty. Thank you all. Have a great day. Thank you all for coming.